Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Never been able to do very well, or hardly at all, is accept limitations. And I, you know, it's probably a little late to understand that because there are so many limitations when you get older and so many limitations in life that pile up, especially the older you get. Health limitations, limitations on, you know, finally you do realize, I guess, after a certain point, despite all the personal growth books and the the dynamic training workshops that you could take, that you pass a certain point and you're not going to be what it was you thought you were going to be once upon a time. There are people who discover new lives or have the willpower and the energy to embark on new lives. Since it's almost been 2 years since I had this major emergency heart surgery. And I'm sure there are many people who have had similar events in their lives, many, many people. You read about them in the papers or you hear about them or you know people who get over things like this. It takes them a while, but then they get right back on the horse or whatever the phrase would be. They find... they don't necessarily, sometimes it's impossible after such, there are things in life that happen, losses that happen to you or shocks to the system mentally, physically, circumstantially, things that happen to people in your family or whatever, where you can't get that old life back. Limitations. I mean, changes to your health, changes to your abilities, to your talents, one way or another. A lot of this has to do with aging, I guess. But you can't have the old life back that you had. And I had an abrupt change. I had one kind of life, and then about 2 seconds later, that life was gone. And because of my limitations and stubbornness, and one of my limitations is not accepting limitations. In other words, not understanding that I need to give up what I once had and to adjust to losses, to adjust to, let's say, aging or to illnesses or disabilities or loss of things that I was able to take for granted once upon a time. Now, I know people can do this. Maybe it's better if things happen to you gradually. In my life, many things have happened to me suddenly. Losses, sudden losses, unexpected, out of the blue, sudden, catastrophic losses. Those are probably a little more difficult to get over, but it all depends on your personality in the first place. So one of the limitations I've had is accepting that I have limitations, and something I struggle with all the time. And one of those particular ones that I'm thinking of right now is that a lot of these shows I do are about situations that I'm in my life, circumstantial situations that feel sort of like traps, or that I will complain about, or that I talk about in a way that there's no way for me to do anything about it. When in fact, part of that is me. That's my filter. That's the way I look at the world, that there's very little, you know, poor, helpless me, there's very little I can do to change things. That's another whole long story, why somebody would have that attitude. I mean, some people are brought up a certain way that they understand that their life is what they make of it. And I guess I was brought up to see life as something that that happens to you rather than you grabbing hold of it and changing it in any way, or that you have that many choices over it. Never seemed that way to me. And that's a bad way to approach life. I think constantly, and I'd have to paraphrase this because I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but that part of the Serenity Prayer, or is it the Serenity Prayer? I don't know. Where it says, God grant me, the knowledge to God grant me the ability, or the ability to accept the things that I cannot change. And this changes all the time, what it is that you can't change. I mean, your circumstances, your interior or external condition. God grant me the ability, is it the ability to accept the things I cannot change and to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I don't think I've had, I don't think I've been successful in any of those three. Three strikes, and I'm definitely out. But I keep trying in my own way. All of this as a lead-in to what I'm going to talk about today, because, as I said, one of the things that I the subjects and the discussions I have, discussions, the monologues that I do here often, and sometimes it leaks into the interviews that I've been doing. Is that the world is a certain way, and it's outrageous, and it's unacceptable, and something has to be done. Maybe not necessarily by me, but something has to be done. Or that I live in a world, and this is, as it's dawning on me in the last year or two, how childlike I am, or childish. It's almost like a kid having a tantrum, or a child in a crib complaining about the bars of the crib. You know, you can't really do much about it. But when you get older and there are things you can do about it, you carry over sometimes, if you're a certain kind of personality, that, someone come and take me out of this crib. You know, oh, really? And then here you are 6 feet tall and 30 years old or whatever. And you don't realize that, or you don't want to realize that you can crawl out of this thing yourself. All of this long introduction here is, because I'm going to talk about something today, which is one of those things. I have friends like I say, and I know people in my family who have the ability to take themselves out of a situation they don't like and go at it, and from sheer hard work and recognizing that it's going to be a hard journey, create a situation that they do feel comfortable in and that they feel like is good for them and it's the life they want. And other people just spend their lives complaining about things. And I guess, unfortunately, I've been the second. And I try to make efforts to be the first, but it's hard. All of which is to say, I went to the movies the other day. There's a non sequitur for you. There's a non segue. I went to the movies the other day, and I don't often go to the movies because I'm kind of isolated. I stay in my house a lot. And to go out to the movies, my wife and I usually go to the movies. Almost always go to the movies in the mornings and on the weekends. She works at a 9-to-5, and I work, I guess, freelance, you could say. And we go in the mornings because it's cheaper, and the price of movies, as everybody knows who goes to the movies these days. And do fewer and fewer people go to the movies? I think people watch movies on their laptops, TV, on laptops, on maybe handheld devices. I don't know. I think the movies charge more. I mean, the ticket prices are outrageous. I'm sure I'm talking about New York City here, of course. Talking about New York City. I don't know what it costs to go to the movies in the multiplex or whatever it is in a small city outside of New York City. I don't know, or a town someplace or in a mall. But the price of a ticket, an adult ticket to the movies in New York City is just extraordinary. And so we go on the weekends because it's cheaper. And also because it's less crowded in the morning, and I can't stand crowds. I get very claustrophobic and sort of overwhelmed with crowds, and kind of person who sits on the aisle so I can get up and make my escape anytime. And so since there's fewer people, it's cheaper. And sometimes in the mornings, on the weekends, they will give you, because, you know, they don't get that many people coming, so they'll reduce the price to try to get more people to come. And in other theaters, if you go in the mornings, they'll give you a senior discount. Senior discount. There's another thing that I've never accepted is getting old, or that I'm older. Anyhow, we went to the movies, and we picked out a movie we wanted to see, Bridge of Spies. Steven Spielberg movie on real events having to do with an event during the Cold War. I think I mentioned that last week on the air. And we get there, and we go to the local movie theater. It's we had individual movie theaters all up and down Broadway where I live, and a lot of these were what was called art films or retro films. They were films that they would play great cuts of films from the beautiful prints of films from the 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, old films or foreign movies, this kind of thing, older ones. And they slowly but surely all disappeared because the rents for these movie theaters were way too high, and the amount that these people could charge to the small number of people who would come to see these movies, it just wound up to be a losing proposition. It was just impossible to support these businesses because the property became so, desirable. And to rent a movie theater, it was probably $100,000 a month, and they weren't taking anything like that in. They couldn't pay anybody. And the population changed a lot. The people who came into the movie theaters from the neighborhood were reflective of the changing, that is to say, fewer of them, reflective of the changing demographic of the whole place where I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Fewer people, the older people got older, they had less money, they weren't able to come in. And then technology, of course, I mean, the internet came in and people got their entertainment from the internet, cable TV and television, so you could watch movies on TV, brand new movies or even older versions of movies on demand, you know, just search around, hit a couple of buttons, you pay your subscription and you do it. And also, I think people people just, you know, generations change. People just got less interested in these older movies. As people got older, it meant something, you know, those movies still meant something to them. A movie from the, if you were like in your 60s or 70s or whatever, movies from the 30s, 40s, and 50s or 60s were, you know, interesting to you. And it reflected back to you times when you first saw them, or even times before you were alive, when it was your parents' generation, you watch a Humphrey Bogart movie, whatever. Or from the 50s, you watch all these biblical epics or the quote-unquote cowboy and Indian movies, you know, the westerns, all the Technicolor stuff. But those people just sort of drifted off, and everybody got captured by the increasing ease of technology, the ability to watch movies in other places. So fewer and fewer people went to these movies, and they disappeared, all these individual movie houses. They weren't part of chains. They were individual movie houses, and they were very treasured by a lot of people in New York City. But fewer people came, and they sort of blinked out like stars that had burned out. That was the end of them. So replaced only by a couple of gigantic monsterplexes. So we go to the Lowe's 68th Street Monsterplex, which has something like, I don't know, it has IMAX, it has 3D, it has 4D, 5D. It's got a huge number of theaters. There's about each theater is not so small. Each theater is, I don't know, several hundred seats. And there must be, it's a giant building, like, you know, occupies three floors. There's a basement, the main floor, and then a second floor. And they have maybe 10, 12 movies playing at the same time. So you sit down in the movies. I mean, you know, I want to get there early. I try to get there early because I like to get a seat on the aisle. I don't like to get there too late and... I don't want to have to sit in the middle or way back or too up too close. I have an exact place where I want to sit. It's me trying to control things. Like, there's no limitations in life. I can do whatever I like, right? But it's a kind of control. And I get to the movies something like 15, 20 minutes early, maybe 25 minutes earlier. Sometimes you miscalculate a bus or a subway and you get there a little earlier. And even if you get there on time, though, let's say you get there 10 minutes early and you get the seat you want. The time that it says when the movie starts is not the time when the movie starts. The movie starts the minute you walk in for like half an hour before even the stated movie time. And for 10, 15, 20 minutes after the stated movie time, maybe 15 minutes, maybe it could be 20, 30 minutes. It seems like hours. They play commercials. They play commercials. You've already, now get this right. You've already paid for your movie, and then you hear the commercials, and then you see trailers for 20 different movies, all of which, by the way, it seems to me they tell you they reveal the entire plot and substance and everything of the entire movie. I mean, it's like watching a mini summary of the whole movie rather than exciting scenes from the movie. And so you have to sit there, and it's noisy. It's noisy. It's astoundingly noisy. And you're watching, of course, you know, you're watching modern movies. Crashes, the destruction of cities, alien races conquering the earth, monsters, vampires, guns, you know, machine guns, cannon going off, wars, guns blasting, explosions, cars, fires, whole buildings blowing up. And they must have speakers the size of SUVs, and 20 of them in everything. Gigantic noise. So you're listening to these commercials that you might see on television. Commercials for cars, commercials for, all kinds of things that you've already paid for it. And you can't, there's no mute button. And the sound is huge. And you're familiar with the fact, I think this has been going on forever, and they've never really, television stations still get away with this crap. One time the FCC made them do something about it, or a couple of times, but every time, since almost like the beginning of television, let's put it back in the 50s, every time a commercial come on, or the sound was louder was louder than the show you were watching, right? And you always had to turn it down and then turn the show back up. And the FCC got involved. People complained. Then I think at one point they made them turn it down. They said, this is not right. It's not fair. And, you know, they've right back to it a lot, but not as bad as it used to be. A lot of times when the commercials come on. But since everything is loud now, it doesn't really, I don't think the commercials are that much louder. Maybe they still are. But in the movie theater, you go in there and you're subject to all these commercials. And they are recorded. You know, they're like shows in themselves. You know, there's a host, usually some person minor fame. There's, you know, some attractive woman or man. And they say, welcome to movie phone preview or whatever it's called. And you have to sit there throughout this. And then the trailers come on and the commercials and boom, bam, boom. And it's so loud. The decibel level is clearly enough to cause, severe damage to your hearing. I mean, if you sat through this on a regular basis, and I don't even know on a temporary basis, there's a whole generation of people from the starting in the 60s and 70s, rock and rollers, people certainly who play on stage, let alone a lot of people who went to a lot of concerts, but people who play on stage with these giant amps, these giant amplifiers, so had something like anywhere from 20 to 40% hearing loss and more, and it got worse as they got older. But in these movie theaters, which is one reason why, you know, I forget because we go so rarely, but it just goes on and on and on. And then when the trailers come on, it's unbelievable. Trails are boom, explosions, car crashes, even people talking to each other. They gigantic, especially the bass speakers, bang, boom. And it's just too much for me. So I put my fingers in my ear and my wife is, sometimes I don't look at the screen either because it's so blatant, so many explosions and monsters. It's not what I came for. It's not what I came to the movies for. But so what? What world do I live in, right? And I put my fingers in my ear, same way I do on the subway. The city's too loud for me anyhow. So, and I wonder, and she puts her fingers in her ears too because it's, you know, a little too much for her. She tries to avoid noise too. Not that she's anywhere near my age or has my problems with noise. But it's a stat. And I looked around though, and I felt like we were part of a Hitchcock movie. My wife and I were the only ones in this theater, and there were people, probably the average age was in the 40s for this movie. but nobody else had their fingers in ears. I guess people are used to noise. My conclusion is, based on this one experience, my scientific conclusion is that Americans are used to noise. And maybe it has to do with age. I'm guessing I was one of the older people in the audience. When you're older, I think the stimuli of the world bother you more. You know, the rush, people rushing around, sounds are too loud. Everything is too fast and too loud, and maybe a bit overwhelming when you're older. But that's not the only thing. I think Americans are just used to noise. I mean, everybody was looking at this screen, and I was looking around at people, and the sound was astounding. And I think Americans are used to noise. They're just used to noise. Maybe it's all the headphones and the earpieces and the earphones and the earbuds and that people have plugged into their heads all the time. Maybe it's the music, the loud music and the loud TV and the announcements from TV. And music is everywhere. It's to me, it's generally a lot of noise and it's overwhelming. But there's music on either a TV or its sound system is on or the TV is turned up absolutely everywhere you go. You cannot avoid it. Now, I'm talking about the city here. I do not know what it's like in a town or a small city out of state, out of New York City. I don't know what it's like. But in New York City, every single place you go into has music on or a TV playing or both. There's a soundtrack. You walk in the bank. You walk in to a drugstore. You walk into a supermarket. Well, supermarkets used to have music. banks, and you ride in a cab. Occasionally you ride, I'll ride in a cab. Cabs have TVs installed in them. You can't turn them off. And when you do turn them off, you still have this bright light shining in your face. But sometimes they don't even work. It says off, but you can't turn it off. The news comes on, commercials come on, they're selling you things. You know, you can't get away from it. You can't get away from it. It's almost like it's a crime to avoid noise. I went into a supermarket the other day, claustrophobic enough, right? These supermarkets are just jammed. The aisles are packed really high and everything. And, you know, it's hard to even walk single file down one of these aisles. And the noise they have on, you know, Sirius Radio, which I used to work for, music of the 70s, music of the 80s, music of the 90s, bam, 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 and turn way up. If you want to talk to a clerk and ask somebody, where is the collard greens? Where's the yogurt? Where's anything? You have to yell. I mean, if you're walking with somebody and you're having a conversation about what you want to buy or where, I wonder where the yogurt is or, the, you know, where's the milk or where's the deli counter, you have to almost yell inside the store. And this is coming off the street in New York, which is already, you know, they're tearing up the streets, putting in new cables. They're demolishing buildings. They're building new buildings. The city is an old city. It's fallen apart. So there's always drilling and smashing and banging. And, you know, cars are honking horns. And it's noisy. But it used to be you walked into a store back in the day, you would walk into a store. And it was quiet. But now everywhere you go, in doctors' waiting offices, in coffee shops, it's just astounding. The TV has got to be on everywhere. Why is that? Are people so used to this kind of stuff? Are they used to television that they feel uncomfortable if it's not somewhere playing? It doesn't even matter what's on. Usually they have some interview show, one of those brainless parrot brain morning interview shows where everybody's told to applaud, so it's loud and everybody's screaming and cheering. They don't even know what they're cheering about, but there they are. And but absolutely everywhere you walk into the bank, and there's music on, music playing, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like I say, there's no mute button. A couple of times in coffee shops and other places, or in the bank, I've gone up to a manager of a place and I said, can you turn that down or can you turn that off? And they say, no, can't turn it off. People like it. I don't think so. I think if you froze any population at any given moment in a bank or a supermarket or something, you ask, you know, do you want this music on? Ask the employees who have to listen to it all day long. Ask the customers in there, do you want this music on? In the coffee shop when you're trying to eat or talk to people where you have to yell across the table. In the bank where you're trying to calculate what it is you want to do or talk to the tellers. I think, my guess is that 75, 80, 85% of the people would say, turn this crap off. It's driving me nuts. Life is hard enough. I need a little peace and quiet. There's very little way in a city, I don't know about other cities, but in New York City, there's very little way that you can get peace and quiet. One way you do it is by plugging things into your head. So in other words, a lot of people, I think, are so used to music, and a lot of it is just noise. They're so used to these things, like, you know, video games plugged into their heads or music plugged into their heads or whatever, radio shows. They do it defensively because the city itself, you know, you're on the subway, you're on the street, you go into a store and you're playing music. Well, then you get to choose. So plug something into your head that you want to hear. But then when you plug the stuff in that you want to hear, then you're not part of the group anymore, and the group itself may not want to hear the music that's, if you're not plugged in, and you're subject to the loudspeakers of the store, or the bank, or the doctor's waiting office, or whatever it is, or the coffee shop, you're not part of the group that might say, you know, we need a little peace and quiet. So between defensive use of stuff plugged in people's ears, and between the constant use of people plugging things into the ears, and all the TVs everywhere, and now stores up and down Broadway and stores all throughout the city have big TVs playing in the windows. So you can't avoid these graphics. And above subway stations and even on sides of buses, there are graphics going all the time. It's like something from a futuristic movie, except the future is here now. And it's just, it's overwhelming. It's too much. And it bothers me. Like I say, it has to be, it must be better outside of New York City. And if you're listening and you live outside of New York someplace, is it that way when you go into every place, like a coffee shop or a bank or something like that, or any place or a supermarket? Is it that way too? I mean, in doctor's offices, do they have all this noise and the TV playing all the time? I think Americans are completely inured to noise. Probably the entire population of the United States, starting when they're, and especially children, because children are always watching, they're brought up to watch TV every minute or plugged into a video game or got something in their head and something is booping, boop, beep, boop, 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 like this. Some video game is making noise or there's crashes or explosions. Everybody is used to all this noise all the time. And it's very, very different than the way I grew up. Now, there, you know, I want to, and I start off this whole show making a qualification about my limitations. I grew up a certain way. I grew up in a house in a very, very quiet neighborhood, lower middle class neighborhood way out in Queens. And it was a quiet neighborhood. And this is in the 50s. So there wasn't that much noise. People didn't have the TV on every second. There weren't devices plugged into people's ears. Sometimes the radio would be on, yeah, you know. But when you walked into a store, if you walked into a hardware store or a drugstore or something like that, you didn't hear it. You walked into the bank, you walked into Woolworths, a supermarket, the bank, a drugstore. You didn't hear any music. You didn't hear any. There wasn't a TV playing, and you didn't hear any music. And it was something that you took for granted. These places, the only sounds you heard in these places were whatever sound was organic to the place. Maybe a cash register would ring. Maybe in the bank you would actually hear the stamping of the teller stamping the savings book, something like that. In the hardware store, you would hear people talking about asking questions. Where do you have this, you know, this size screw and this nut, this bolt? You might hear people, sifting their hands through different boxes. They had wooden boxes. We're in Woolworths. You would have people, talking to each other, asking questions of the clerks. But it was quiet. It was a quiet thing. But once again, I have to insert myself in this. It wasn't just a question of the good old days, you know, which is what a lot of old farts talk about all the time. It's a question of me personally, too. I've always been overwhelmed by everything, by noise. I mean, I'm one of those people, and my daughter, unfortunately, inherited this from me, who has a nervous system, who was born with a nervous system outside their skin, not on the inside of their skin where it's supposed to be. You know how that people, some people say, oh, yeah, he's thick-skinned. God bless people who are thick-skinned, who don't get overwhelmed by the stimuli of life, you know, that their five senses are not constantly overwhelmed. But I was one of those kids, and I'm still this way, much more now for various reasons than I used to be. Now, my poor daughter inherited some of this, where everything is overwhelming, where stimuli are overwhelming. Although my daughter loves New York City. She loves Manhattan. She grew up in Manhattan, and she's used to it. Me, I didn't grow up in Manhattan, and I have never gotten used to it. So, and it's much noisier now than it used to be. And, of course, there's more noise than there used to be now in Manhattan. But there are people, actually, there are people who have, I think it's like a physical condition. Because I met somebody, an occupational therapist once, who told me that they work with people who have this physical condition, or is it a mental condition, I don't know, or both, where they overreact to stimuli. And I've always had this since I was a kid, and I know other people do too. People sometimes, and if it's extreme, they call it like a gag response or a startle response. When you hear any kind of loud noise, you jump. It's almost like PTSD. It's like PTSD, but you're born that way, unfortunately. But PTSD for soldiers who've been in a war, they try, I think a lot of these people try to live in places outside the city, and if they live in the city, they're constantly having to find places that are quiet, if there's any place left to find that's quiet. Even the libraries in New York City, man, you know, the library, that's the place, it's supposed to be quiet. Even the library, people are used to noise. There's computer classes, and it leaks through the doors. And people talk in the library. Used to be people would say, if you didn't talk, you whispered in a library. people were reflecting. They were trying to study. You whispered. You were quiet in a library, but not even there anymore. But I think people who have PTSD from wars, like if you're a Vietnam veteran or a veteran of one of the endless Middle Eastern wars, cannon fire and rifle fire and gunfire and mortars going off, boom, bam, boom, or World War II, people, I think, and especially this happened in the town I was growing up with, people after World War II, they wanted peace and quiet. A lot of these guys in my neighborhood had lived through hell. They lived through hell, and one of it was an audio hell. There was constant, sometimes not constant, but so there was bursts of gunfire. There was cannon barrages that would last for minutes on end, sometimes for an hour on end, mortars going off, bursts of gunfire, their own guns fired in their own ears, right? And it's and then the chaos of this, when they came back, they set up a lot of communities, like the one I grew up in, where they didn't want to hear any noise, but they took it too far. They didn't want any trouble either, and that included from their own kids, which gave birth to the 60s. But specifically, me again, in the house that I grew up in, it was a crazy house. My father was given to screaming and yelling. He was a shouter and a yeller, and he turned red, and he would accompany this sometimes with physical expression of what he was angry about. But he would yell a lot, and my mother would sometimes go into fits, and she would scream and rage. And so it was a crazy, chaotic, noisy house in which I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed being born that way anyhow in the first place. And I needed solitude. So I'd escape to my room, which was in the attic, or... as many of you know, I would go in the back, who have listened to me before. There was a cemetery in back of my house. It was the quietest place. It was preferable because it was so crazy and so noisy, and noisy in a psychic way, not just in an audio way in my house, that I needed peace and quiet and a way to calm down and recollect my own self. You know, I mean, with all this noise smashing into you all the time, and if you grow up that way, you need time on your own. You need time by yourself to recollect yourself, to reintegrate yourself so that you know who you are after a certain point. You realize who you are. And I used to go sit in the cemetery, but of course, where it was quiet, right? Nobody was making noise in the cemetery. There was nothing going on there. Just the sound of the wind blowing through the grass. And maybe the wind blowing through the leaves. And it was quiet. It was quiet. But it's not the kind of place you would choose because it has a certain effect on you, too. I mean, after all, I was the only person I've ever known who actually would have to retreat to a cemetery to get some relief. I mean, I could go out on the street. I did that. You know, I mean, we'll go out on the street because it was quiet where I grew up. But and oddly enough, actually, here's a contradictory thing. I know I'm jumping all over the place here, but a lot of people use noise. Like I said before, a lot of people plug their own noise. This is a way you can choose. It's defensive noise. A lot of people plug their own music. I call it noise, but they plug their own music or their own listening experience or their own, you know, radio show or something into their heads because that's what they want to hear rather than hearing all the noise around them, the subway noises and people playing other stuff and the noise of the street and the crazy overstimulation of the city and the sounds of everything that go on in the city, all the drilling and the ambulances and everything else. So they plug that in. And I do the same thing, and I think a lot of people do this. I have a noise machine. If you've ever been to a therapist, they have a noise machine. It's white noise that they turn on in the waiting room so you can't hear what's being discussed in a therapist's office. And at night, and sometimes during the day, I go home, and just to calm down from the noises of the city, and there are many, and the noises that other people make defensively and aggressively, I turn on the sound of rain, or I turn on the sound of, it'll say, gentle rain. And somebody, either they loop this, or they record it for 10 hours, I guess, or they just loop it around. But, you know, somebody, it's a real recording of the sound of actual rain falling somewhere in a forest or nature sounds. And I turn this on. So it's me choosing the noise that I want to hear. And I turn this on, and it's nature sounds. And it relaxes me. It relaxes me. So that's what I turn on when I get home. I mean, like I took a bus down here today to the studio, and the neighborhood where the where the offices and studios of PRN are is a pretty noisy neighborhood. It's sort of lower midtown Manhattan, and it's crashingly noisy down here to get here, and it's really quite extraordinary. So, and it takes like an hour and 25 minutes on the bus, and people talk on a bus, and they have their machines on. And if it's school time, kids are jumping up and down and scrambling and screaming and, you know, making kid noises, which is just fine, you know, pleasant. But it took me a long, you know, so it takes a long time to get down here. Then I take the bus all the way back up, and then get to my neighborhood. And as I've mentioned before, I'm about six blocks away from the fire department, the cops, and a major New York Manhattan hospital. Sirens all the time. So I get up to my apartment, and, you know, there's plenty of, it's a quiet apartment. It's in the back. You know, there's a little too much solitude. My life is a life of extremes. So I either go from too much solitude to too much noise. And that's the way the city is, too, though. And, but at night, what we do is, and partially this is because I snore. My poor wife has to live with my snoring. So she turns on. Again, this is defensive noise. She turns on. We have a sound machine, which makes either white noise, which is just like, just goes on all night long until we turn it off. And then the sounds, you know, we're in the back of the building, but there's huge, tall buildings all around us. And sometimes people are practicing their instruments. There was one guy who was a student at Juilliard, a graduate student, who plays a grand piano all day long. And sometimes he plays a little too late, too. And he plays modern music, real discordant junk. He plays the most modern music, total discordant junk. If he was playing all day long like he does and he was playing, I don't know, Mozart or Bach or Chopin or something, maybe I could deal with it a little bit better. Anyhow, so there's that, and then there's people talking, and then there's construction, always. There's always demolition or construction, always. These buildings that I live in and around or on the street just never stops. And then there's the ambulances. So I turn on this music, and at night we turn on the noise machine, and we can select. This noise machine has a selection. You can turn on the sound of waves, ocean waves, which some people find very relaxing. this. Or the sound of the wind in the trees, or sound of a distant storm, or the sound of a stream flowing. And turn this on. People turn. I think millions of people use these things. I believe that millions of people, maybe you use them too. It helps people sleep, or they turn it on during the day when they want to be quieter. Of course, if you live, this is totally, you know, unnecessary if you live in a quiet place. Especially if you live out in the woods or you live close to nature, what you have to do is turn off all the junk in your house, of course, and just take a walk outside. You know, I live near a park, but even when I walk in the park, you can hear the sound of traffic and, you know, the ambulances a few blocks away, and, you know, people are playing music sometimes in the park, or something's going on. But if you lived out in the woods, I have my wife's sister and her family live out virtually, literally, in the woods in Maine. They're not too far from a very small town, but they're, half an acre to an acre of country road, which leads to their house. And, it's a private road. And they're out there, and it's quiet. And all they hear, basically, all they'll ever really hear, are the sounds of nature. They'll hear birds, or they'll hear, the wind in the leaves. That's what they hear, and various other nature sounds. The quietest place I ever went to, speaking of noise and quiet today, the quietest place I ever went to in my brief travels throughout the world, and I know there are other places that must be extremely quiet. A lot of people go to the ocean because they like that sound, right? A lot of people travel to places that are quiet from New York City, and every place that you go to from New York City has to be quieter, unless you go to another big city. You get used to the noise. One of the places that I went to, of all the places I ever traveled to, what I liked best was New Mexico. I traveled across the country once, and I went to the desert. You know, we drove out to the desert out in New Mexico to see an Indian. It was a Hopi rain dance because it hadn't rained for a while. But just we stopped a couple of times, and you just get out of the car, and there are these wind-shaped rocks and the sand and the cactus. The desert is, it's not dead. It's not like the cemetery, right? It's alive. It's jumping. Well, even a cemetery when I was a kid, there's all kinds of wildlife in the cemetery, birds and rabbits and snakes and, you know, insects and everything. So everything is alive everywhere all the time, except sometimes in cities where everything becomes completely technologized and you become part of the technology. You become part of the sound. You're not really a person anymore. You're actually an extension of the electronics. People now these days, especially, again, New York City, and kids growing up with, well, the video games and everything, people have become extensions of technology. And it used to be the other way around, that you would turn on and off occasionally something electronic because you chose to listen to something now. Now, when you walk into a living room now, or you walk into your bedroom, but especially if you walk into your living room, used to be when you walked into your living room a while back, it was dark because you turned the lamp out and you turned the TV off if that was on, or you turn out the lamp if you were sitting in there reading, and it was just dark. Only light was from what would come in through the window and what little there was. Now when you walk into a modern American apartment or a house, you walk into the living room, it looks like there's 20 snakes staring at you. There are green and blue and red dots of light everywhere on preamps, on modems, on God knows what. All these things are looking at you all the time. And I had a friend who used to say once that the TV, you don't watch TV. The people don't watch TV anymore. And he was telling me this like 30 years ago. He says, because I at one point was plugged into watching this giant color TV. I was depressed and I was watching color TV and I wasn't getting out of my bed. And he said, like a lot of other people, he says, you don't watch the TV. The TV is watching you. And I think people now, they think they're playing a video game. They think they're watching TV. They think they're, there was a, what was the show on TV? The Twilight Zone or some other show where it said, do not attempt to adjust your set. We're in control now. This was prophetic. The technology is in control, everything. And of course, I couldn't even, it's ironic. I mean, I couldn't even, without technology, I couldn't have the sound of, recorded sound of rain in my apartment, gentle rain, or the recorded sound at night when we wanted peace and quiet and to shut out other noise that we didn't want to hear white noise. Shh. All this is technology. You couldn't even hear me talk here if it wasn't for the technology of the internet and headphones and everything else. So it's all ironic. But I do remember the desert out in New Mexico. It was quiet. It was just peaceful. And you could feel like it would have been an offense to have a radio on, even a car radio or anything, even the sound of the car tires. It was just an ancient, peaceful thing. When sometimes what I used to do, and I still do it if I want, and if I'm feeling kind of overwhelmed. Hold on one second. yeah, Tara, speaking of, how much time do I have left? Okay. Sometimes I'll go into a church. Sometimes the synagogues aren't open as much, but the churches they'll leave open. There's one large church that I've gone to before. I mentioned Riverside Church, which is high up over the Hudson. It's about a mile and a half from where I live, and maybe about a mile, about 20 or more blocks. And you walk up there, and you walk through Riverside Park, which is about as quiet as you can get up near my neighborhood. And it's fairly quiet. And you go into the church, and if you go in the middle of the day, in the middle of the morning or the middle of the day, you can sit there and you can reflect. You can reflect. You can gather yourself together again. Whether or not you choose to commune with some higher power, that's up to you. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I think the higher power you're communing with is your own integrity, is your own integrity. And yeah, there is a higher power, but you can plug into that. I don't see how people could possibly, and it seems that way to me, is that the all this noise in American culture, the land of noise, America, the United States of noise, all this land, all this noise in American culture all the time that you hear, I think drives away the ability to reflect, to make conscious, reasonable choices, to get in touch with any kind of spirituality. It's just amazing. And sometimes I think that this is done on purpose, though. I mean, I think a lot of noise is played on purpose, and a lot of noise. I mean, think of a lot of political rallies. I mean, gigantic Nazi rallies, right? The more noise there is, the more chaos, the less you're an individual, and the more you're tending to go automatically with whatever direction the crowd is going and the mob is going. You need time to reflect. People used to say there's a time and a place for everything, but I think in modern America there's never not a place for noise. But what I said in the very beginning is true. You have to seek it out. If you want quiet, you want a quiet life, you have to go find this quiet life. And people can do that. People can do that. You don't have to sit and complain about the lack of peace and quiet. Just go find a quiet place and live there.